We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Thanks for listening to KC Sports Network, proudly presented by Empress Bank. Coming up, the latest on the 2024 NFL Draft from the team at KC Sports Network, your home for Kansas City Chiefs coverage.
Welcome into the KCSN Draft Show, getting you ready for Draftmas. We are almost into April. We are getting so close. We're less than a month from the NFL Draft happening. We are obviously excited about that here at KC Sports Network. As much as we love doing draft coverage, we write our own book. We have a 300-page book on the draft coming out here in a week, KCSN Draft Guide, available for pre-order, and it releases on April 5th. The link is in the description of the show. If you want 300 pages of Chiefs-specific draft content, you can take care of that. But today is an opportunity for us to, you know, share some of the interviews that we've done during this pre-draft process. And so we've got a few players. We're going to interview, you know, we're going to show you some of the offensive line conversations that we've had with some of these prospects, and there's some interesting ones here today. We're going to start with Walter Rouse, the offensive tackle out of Oklahoma. This was one of my favorite interviews of the entire pre-draft process. Interesting backstory. Started his career at Stanford. You'll hear a little bit about that. Then went to Oklahoma. Really enjoyed talking to him. Here's Walter Rouse, the tackle out of Oklahoma. All right, we are here with Oklahoma offensive tackle Walter Rouse. Walter, thank you so much for joining us.
Of course, thank you for inviting me on.
Yeah, we're excited to talk to you. Tell us a little bit about your journey into football, how you got started.
Okay, so my journey is kind of all over the place. It didn't really start, you know, I didn't start playing football when I was a young kid and, you know, Pop Warner. And my mom tried to get me to do that, but then some things happened and she was like, you know what, you're not ready for football. We're just going to stick with basketball, which is what my first love was. And you know, I thought I was going to do that. And basketball was a big pride in my family. And my grandfather, who I'm named after, he made the winning shot in the 1963 NCAA championship for the Loyola Ramblers. So, you know, especially my dad's side, he was like, you're an NBA college guy, you know. You know, I thought that for the longest time, too. And then I really first started to fall in love with football when I got into high school. And I started playing. And I was ended up on both sides of the ball. The position I did not want to play the most was offensive lineman. I was like, the big stomachs, you know, that's not going to be me. Not at all. But here I am talking to y'all now. So, you know, look out there. He's where everything works out for a reason. Yeah. But I was actually a really big academic guy. I still am, but I wanted to go to Stanford for the longest time, straight for academics and not football. I wanted to be a cardiothoracic surgeon specializing in pediatrics. You know, I still want to go to med school one day, but, you know, whenever that's done with football. And so going into Stanford as a freshman, I had no aspirations of going to the league. I still wanted to use that as a platform to, you know, pay for school and then then get to go to med school. And so, but that didn't mean that I wasn't giving my all at Stanford. You know, I wasn't giving 100%. I ended up starting. I played 12 games, started 11 games at my freshman year at Stanford, and I'm actually very thankful for that because that led into my sophomore year, and that was the COVID year, which everything was crazy. Mm-hmm. And it was truly after that year where I really started to fall in love with football. And I was like, I want to do this full time. I mean, especially the way we ended the season, 4-game winning streak. I mean, the games we won in about every single fashion you can imagine. Overtime win, double overtime win, last second win. We had an 8-minute drive to end the fourth quarter against Washington, and really just imposing your will on the opponent. Like, there's no better feeling than that. Moving a guy from point A to point B against their will, and the defense is saying, man, we give up, man. You know, can't take this, you know, bleak word. You know, this, like, that's amazing, you know, have that feeling. And also, like, the implications they can have for your family, that, you know, all that together. I chose, like, this is a truly an amazing sport. And forget basketball. Like, this is what I want to do. And so moving on from there, you know, going into my junior year, you know, that's really, like, the first time I even thought about declaring. But, you know, I thought that, you know, I wanted more time to develop and get better. So I came back for my senior year, and I said, no matter what happens this year, I'm declaring, no matter what happens. And then week four of the season, game three against Washington in September, I tear my labrum, shoulder pops out, pops back in. I later find out it's a torn labrum, and that really put the seed in my head of, like, maybe I do want to come back one more year, because I don't want to be talking to you guys, you know, with a whole, you know, brace on, and I can't do the Pro Bowl. I'm assuming that Pro Bowl. Maybe one day. Pro Day, Combine, or talking to teams, and I think I would have been drafted as a 6th, 7th round player or undrafted. And I knew at my best, I was better than one of those guys. And so I was going to come back, and then Coach Shaw resigned. And so there's a lot of uncertainty with the program. And I'm like, what's going on? So not wanting to go back to Stanford, wanting to come back for another year, I decided to enter the transfer portal. And I wanted to go somewhere that would really develop my skills, go somewhere that had a standard of excellence. And that was Oklahoma. Out of all the schools I picked, a little hiccup with Nebraska, but I eventually landed on Oklahoma. And I got to say that that's one of the best decisions I've ever made in my life. And one of the things that people assume, but it's not true, that I spent my 4 years at Stanford, but I didn't graduate. I put my degree on hold to go somewhere else to get better at football. I do plan on going back to Stanford at a later date, whenever that is. But if you were to tell my freshman year self that I was going to do that and leave Stanford and go somewhere else for football, I would have thought you were crazy. But that's how much I love the game, and I want to get better at it, and how much I have a short window to get to the league, and that's where I want to be. I want to be in the league for as long as I can.
Was there a specific moment during that second year at Stanford where that just, it was a moment where that switch flipped, where you're like, no, football is what I want to do right now?
Right. I think it was really just at the end of the season with the culmination of everything, and especially with the last game of the season. That was really just the exclamation mark. I mean, it's second overtime. We're like doing our 2-point conversion with UCLA, and defense has to get the stop. They don't get the stop, and we got to keep going to third overtime and whatnot. And that moment, just running on the field, that as up to that point, that's like the greatest feeling I've had in football. It was truly just amazing. And then just going back and thinking on that moment and the rest of the season, I'm like, there's nothing better than this. Like, there's truly nothing better than this. And wanting, like, especially, you know, winning, but just playing football in general. And even going into that next year and whatnot, and, you know, we were 3-9 that my junior year, 3-9 again in my senior year. But still, I was like, playing this game of football is one of the best things I could ever done in my life. And really after that moment, I mean, I was full head of steam, football all the way.
Mm-hmm. So I'd like to know a little bit about that. So what kind of changed in how your commitment level changed maybe to the game of football? Not to say that you weren't committed beforehand, right, but obviously there was something that triggered in you that made you want, you know, to commit in a different way. What did that look like, that transition, that commitment? What did it look differently?
Well, I mean, I was truly excited going into that offseason. So I was like, okay, this is going to be a huge offseason for me going into my junior year. You know, let's get this thing going. And like you said, I was always committed as a freshman and sophomore.
Yeah.
And, you know, also going in, then I was coming as a junior, I was also an upperclassman. So I was able to learn from vets like Walker Little, Foster Sorrell, and what they did, and taking those things with me going to that my sophomore offseason. I was like, you know, this is going to be huge for me. But tragedy struck. I ended up literally breaking my back.
Mm.
I had something called spondylolysis, which is a bilateral fracture of my L5. So I ended up being in a turtle shell brace for 6 months.
Mm.
So I missed winter, spring, and I didn't really get back into things until to summer. So I felt like I was at a disadvantage because I didn't have that time that I really felt that I needed to get stronger and develop more. But, you know, I still was full steam ahead. You know, things happen. You got to be able to move on and roll with the punches. So you know, just doing whatever I took. Two quotes that, you know, one that I've always had with me and another that I got when I was at Oklahoma that stick with me that allowed me to push forward each and every day is, one is, today I will do what others won't, so tomorrow I can accomplish what others can't. So what am I going to do today that you're not going to do? Am I going to get up this early? Are you going to get up at 4 or 5? Because you're not. I'm not saying you know. That's going to make me better. Am I going to get an extra 10 minutes of filming, extra 20 minutes? I'm going to ask this extra question, ask a vet, bring people along with me, like go against another guy on defense who I know has beat me many times to get me better. That I really took with me, especially after that year, from my junior year, senior year, especially at Oklahoma. And the other quote that I have is, greatness is on the other side of I don't feel like it. Because there are plenty of times when I'm with Schmitty in the summer and we got to do 16, 20, 25, 100 sprints. And I'm like, I'm not doing this, or I don't want to do this. But in the back of my head, I'm like, no, we're doing this. Because greatness is on the other side of I don't feel like it. And I truly felt that everyone at Oklahoma, and even when we were doing it at Stanford, that being able to push others, and we're trying to achieve that greatness.
Your drive, your internal motivation just sounds absolutely phenomenal. Is there somebody in your life where you think you get that from?
I think it's really a combination of just the support system that I've had growing up from my mom, my dad, my grandfather, and everyone just really saying, like, you know, I can be anyone, anything in this world, as long as I put my mind to it. Hard work always pays off. And just having that from such an early age really instilled that I could do anything that I wanted to. And even as of recent, my fiance, who we're getting married in July, by the way.
Congratulations.
Thank you. You know, she has been my rock that I don't think I'd be able to be in this position without her. And she's been another source of great motivation for me that's also not only external, but has provided internal motivation for me as well. And just the support system in general. So there hasn't been just one person, but I have to give credit to all of those people.
The pre-draft process gives you a lot of opportunities to, you know, focus on football the way you're talking about and make big strides and improvements in your game before you even get to the NFL. What are the things that you're prioritizing, the things you're emphasizing improving on to get ready for the next level?
Well, you know, of course we all know about, you know, training for the combine and whatnot and doing that, but, you know, what some people might, you know, forget to do is, you know, you guys, you know, work on your football skills and whatnot. And, you know, going back on my film and, you know, taking the criticism and the comments, you know I need to work on staying low and not being a knee bender and not a waist bend, you know, making sure my hands are in tight, you know, really working on those two things and being that technical person that I claim to be, you know, and can really continue on that, because guys I may have beat a certain way in the college, that's not going to go the same way Myles Garrett or Nick Bosa, you know, or really anyone in the league. So you have to up your game to a level that you've never been before. So just continue to work on those things. And really, because I'm nowhere near a complete player, but just everything, but especially those things that I had mentioned.
Well, and you mentioned you're always improving as a player year after year. And you said that you improved a lot while you're at Oklahoma. Is there one specific thing that you feel like you improved the most in this past year while at Oklahoma since you've been there?
I really improved with everything. I got to say, I definitely think, especially from my senior year at Stanford to my first year at Oklahoma pass pro, definitely improved. And I got to give credit to Coach Biedenboe, who I think did an amazing job with, you know, helping me out and, you know, really tweaking what I would need to be tweaking and fixing what needed to be fixed. I mean, he was pointing out things on the first couple of days of training camp that I hadn't even noticed in my 4 years at Stanford. I mean, like, oh snap, like that makes so much sense now. You know, it's like, just square this up. Just what are you doing? Just turn this. I'm like, oh, okay. That works. Like, I see what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah.
So I definitely pass pro. And then with that, you know, working independent hands and when to use two hand punches, and because Coach Beaton was very versatile in his coaching, and it's not just like, okay, you can only do this or just do this. He's really allowed us to have that freedom, but to know when to use that freedom.
So and on that exact note right there, when you're getting ready to set up for a pass play, you know, each play is a little bit different, but what are you looking for to key in on when you should be using a single hand, you know, your inside hand, when do you should use two hands? What are you looking for as the play goes on for that?
So it really all depends on the rush. You know, if you're going to get a bull, you definitely want to use two hands. That's going to, you know, stop, you know, my old line coach used to say, stop his heart, you know, stop him right there and hop, hop. But, you know, if you feel like you don't have a good edge on him, that, you know, you could use an inside hand, or if you're squared up with him, use that outside hand, but get that inside hand on him quick. You don't want to be, you know, outbounds just one hand. Or, you know, if you feel him coming in, just square up, punch him with two hands. So there's really a lot of things you can combo with, or just 1-2 punch or 1-2 clamp, outside clamp, inside clamp. There's a lot of things that you can do. And being able to have that freedom and versatility that Coach Bino has taught us that I didn't really know I could do or have is great, especially going into the next level. If there's a coach that, you know, only wants to do a certain way, cool, I can do that certain way because I've learned it. I've learned it in many different ways. So just being able to have that is great.
Let's talk about a scenario here. It's 4th and 1.
Okay.
Game's on the line. You get this yard. You close the game out. Would you rather, let's say you make the key block on it, all right, and you guys convert, you get the first down, the game's over. Would you rather have that happen at home with your fans going nuts? Would you rather have that on the road and the whole place goes silent?
Well, I gotta say, I feel like I actually had that scenario happen with the Red River Showdown, a rivalry, and that was more of a mixture of both because it was both a home game and an away game.
Yeah.
But let's say if we were playing at Texas. Probably have to be an away game. You know, we'll celebrate with our fans when we get back, but just to be able to look at the fans and just, you know, have them be so dejected, just like we're on the sideline storming the field. Like, I think storming an opposite school's field, a rival school's field, is one of the best things you can do. Mm-hmm. I mean, storming your own field, that's great, but. Oh man, because they hate you at that moment, and you all you can do is revel in it like that. I love that, and I think, you know, especially what happened with at Texas, and you know, after that play from BG to Nick Anderson, that was amazing, truly amazing.
Oh, I mean, just like a feeling like that's amazing. And so that happens. Are you going to talk a little bit of trash to the opposing team, or are you just going straight to your teammates, or like even just your general demeanor during a game? Are you a little bit of a talker, or are you getting right back business as usual after most plays?
Well, during games, I'm actually more of I don't really talk trash. I may have said something here and there, but I usually just let my on-field abilities and skills do the talking. You want to keep talking? That's cool. You know, put you in the dirt here, you know, drive you downfield, you know, open up this box so we can get this hole. But I will say, after we beat Texas, you know, I was chirping to the fans a little bit, and I had the hat on, you know. So after the game, especially a game like that, I'll talk a little trash.
All right, Walter, who's the toughest defensive end you went up against?
Ever or just?
It could be this year, it could be ever.
I'd say ever as far as Kayvon Thibodeau. I think we've had some great battles. And, you know, he's doing really well in the league, especially this year. But, yeah, it probably would have been him. He's definitely the hardest hitter I've gone against. My sophomore year, I remember, first play of the game, we have, like, an inside zone. And, you know, I was like, it hit me. I'm like, oh, okay, the season's back. Football's back, baby. This is it. But, no, I think he's a great player. And that's probably the toughest opponent I've went up against. And we've had some great battles.
Yeah.
So let's fast forward. It's draft night. You get that phone call. Your name is being called. First, who's there with you? Who's at, you know, your draft party with you? Who's hanging out? And then what are just the emotions going through you at that time?
Well, of course, everyone in my immediate family, my fiance, mom, grandma, cousin, other grandma, aunt, like immediate family, of course, and then close family, friends, and just honestly, I can't even tell you because I know I'm going to be happy. I might even cry some, emotional. Ecstatic, but I really won't know until it happens. But this is like I said, football wasn't always my first love. But when I started wanting to do this full time, like I can't tell you, it feels like it's a lifelong dream. Like to get that call, all that work I've done, even like to playing basketball in elementary school and going into football and doing, you know, Boy Scouts and martial arts. It's like, it feels like it's all been a culmination leading up to that moment right there. All the hard work I've been through, like, you know, crying, sharing blood, sweat, and tears with my teammates, like, it culminates in that one moment right there. And I can't tell you how that I'm going to feel amazing. Emotional, but I don't know exactly how it's going to be. But I'm so happy and fortunate that I'll have my family members right with me. I know a couple people that'll be crying on my family member side. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's like I might not even like. I hope I get the call and it'll hang up or something. You know, that's what I'm worried about. But
I'm
yeah,
sure they'll call you back.
Yeah, I would hope so. I would hope so. Yes, sir, absolutely.
Well, that's Oklahoma tackle Walter Rouse. Thank you so much for talking.
Thank you guys.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep. All right, that was Walter Rouse, the tackle out of Oklahoma. Again, a really fun prospect. I think just a really – he's a guy that has his head on his shoulders, right? He's just a really smart, thoughtful well-spoken kid, and he's a good football player. And he's someone that I think there is some more projectability to because he has slowly kind of started to understand the process, to appreciate the process, to fall in love with the game. I believe him when he says all those things. And I'm looking forward to seeing him continue to develop. I think he's a guy that could be a swing tackle for the Chiefs, you know, in the coming seasons. So it's funny, he actually never played with Wanya Morris at Oklahoma, but he's coming from Oklahoma, and I think he's another guy that could play potentially on both sides of the line. I think he did that at the East-West Shrine Bowl. Another player I want you guys to hear from, Aneem Dankwa out of Howard. This is an unbelievably massive human. This is one of the biggest players I've ever seen in my entire life. He helped himself at the Shrine Bowl as well. He's another guy that helped himself at the Shrine Bowl as well. Here's our interview with Aneem Dankwa, the tackle out of Howard. We are here with left tackle Aneem Dankwa. Aneem, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
You know, I would love to just kind of get a little bit of background on, you know, how you got into the game of football. Just tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I didn't grow up playing football. I joined my high school football team in St. Rock, in a school called St. Rock in Canada. The coach will see me walking around the hallways. You know, you ever see those memes where it's like the coach sees a big kid and they're like, hey, you should join the football team. That's literally exactly how it happened with me. And my first year, obviously I didn't play. I didn't know anything about football. I never heard about football. When you said football to me, I thought of soccer because I grew up in Ghana. So that whole first year, I didn't play. Second year, which was my sophomore year, I had to transfer out of the school because my dad got a job in a different state. Well, they call it provinces in Canada. So I ended up missing that year. And then the next year after that, my junior year, I had to sit out because of transfer rules.
Mm.
So I didn't play football really until like that summer of that junior year. And that kind of led into going to school in California for a semester. Kind of got homesick, so came back. And then I did a last year at the Taft High School, which is where I finished high school at. So that's kind of my journey with football.
That's quite the journey, man. Yeah. So what then got you to the point where you were playing collegiate football?
Yeah, so coming out of high school, my recruiting was kind of slowed down because of the clearing house. I didn't get cleared till April 28th, which is about 3 months from signing day. So a lot of schools didn't have scholarship available. So when Howard came knocking, they're like, hey, like, we got a scholarship available. I'm like, yeah, I'm taking a visit. So I took a visit, and I committed that same day, and I decided to stick with Howard for all my the rest of my career.
So, you know, can you tell me about someone that has been really important to you in your football development, your football journey?
Absolutely. So after my freshman year, our coach got fired. So we got a new coaching staff, Coach Larry Scott. He came from Florida, sure, and he came with his staff. And him, along with my O-line, my second O-line coach, Coach Sweet, they were very hard on me, to say. There were some tough days. They definitely pushed me, and they held me to a really high standard. They were aware that I didn't play football for a long time because that year was, my fourth year playing football. So I was still trying to learn the game. They didn't take it easy on me. They held me to the same standard. They held everybody to, and some days even higher. They pushed me a lot, and that definitely helped my growth. Going through that, it made me a very resilient football player.
What's one thing that either, you know, in football or in life that you feel like you learned from them that you've taken away from what you've gotten, basically, from that school?
Yeah, it was just to push myself, you know. Sometimes you're capable of more than you think you are, and you just have to allow yourself and your mind to get to those places. You know, if you allow yourself to get to those uncomfortable places, you find that you make a lot of personal growth. So that's something I definitely learned that, you know, I carry with me throughout life.
The pre-draft process is a big opportunity for players to improve their game, getting to focus solely on football, you know, away from, you know, the traditional classrooms and all that stuff. You're getting, you know, just an opportunity to really focus on one thing. What's something that you are really trying to make strides in as you get ready for the next level?
Yeah, so something I definitely want to get better at is understanding coverages. You know, not that it really matters to O-linemen, but it helps, though, you know. Understanding when teams are going to be in two high versus one high versus when they're going to run cover zero can help you make your block sometimes, because the more you know about a game, it slows down for you. So that's something I've tried to focus on, especially in the pre-draft process. You know, a lot of teams ask you to drop your favorite plays, you know, the scheme you ran. And it's kind of impressive as a lineman if you could drop, you know, the coverages with it and what the safeties are doing. It's kind of like some nerdy stuff that, you know, makes you look good.
Yeah. So going down that route, what is your favorite play? If you had to draw it up, you can give us a verbal concept right now.
My favorite play is outside zone to a two-man surface to my side, whether I'm a right tackle or left tackle. I really love blocking outside zone. I feel like it highlights my movement skills and my power. So I really love blocking outside zone.
All right, so let's talk about a scenario here I want to give you. It's fourth and one, playing your rival. Big game. You need a first down to ice this thing out. You make the big block that kind of closes that thing out. You're running. You know what? Why not? Fourth and one. We're gonna run wide. So why not? We'll do it. And you make the key block, right?
Yeah.
Would you rather that be at home with all your friends screaming, going nuts? Would you rather it be on the road? Place goes silent.
Oh, definitely on the road. There's just something about taking the crowd out the game, you know? And it's like, it's just a lot of thrill. You know, obviously you want to be, you know, home with a fan sharing for you, but, you know, it's also a great feeling when you go to somebody's home and just ruin it for them.
I love that. Okay, so one other question for you. What is one thing that, based on the feedback you're getting, that, you know, NFL teams want to see out of you, you know, as you progress to the next level?
Yeah, so one thing NFL teams have wanted to know is how I'm, like, controlling and managing my weight, because obviously I'm a pretty big guy, so they've asked a lot of questions about that. And I just told them, you know, like, having the more resource and the knowledge on what to eat and diet is definitely something that, like, I've been granted more access to than I ever was at any point in my life. So that's definitely something, you know, I plan on taking very seriously and incorporating in my life, both even while I play football, even after football, you know. So that's definitely something they've wanted to know. So something to keep in mind.
So your path through this process, you've obviously had a ton of support. You described a lot of that support. You probably also had a lot of doubters as well. Which do you feed off of more, the support that you get from your family, the coaching staff and all of that,
yeah,
or the guys that are doubting you that don't think you can do it?
Oh, I love the doubters, man. I love the doubters. I feel like you need haters. There was a soundbite of Cat Williams that he was talking about. You need haters, you know? And if you need, like, he said, if you don't have somebody to hate on him, man, you know, that's kind of like, I like that. Because, you know, it's good to have support, but support sometimes, you know, can kind of make you feel complacent. When you have everybody in your ear telling you, you're doing so good, you're doing amazing, you know, that kind of complacency and comfortability sets in. You know, I'm a very competitive person. And I love when people tell me I'm not good, because then it's like something to keep in mind. You know, I never want to be at a point where everybody tells me how good I am. I'd rather have everybody tell me I suck and I need to get better, because then that's something I'll keep in my mind every day I go to work.
Well, Aneem, the haters are going to be furious in April because you're going to get a call, and it's going to be from an NFL team telling you that you've been drafted by them. Tell me where you're at. Tell me who you're with. Tell me the emotions you're going to feel when you're getting drafted.
Yeah, so I was making a joke that if they call me, I'll probably be out in the field working out. So if they call me, I hope I'll be with my family, be at home in Canada, you know, to enjoy that experience with them. Because I've came a long way and they've supported me throughout. So whatever team I go to, I hope I get to enjoy that experience with my family.
That's great. Aneem Dankwa, left tackle, thank you so much for joining us.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Thanks again to Aneem Dankwa, just a massive human, nearly 6'8", 6'7", 6'8", 353 pounds, 35, and an 8-inch arms. Just a long, big project. And, I mean, his 10-yard split was looking good coming out. I mean, he had a high-end 10-yard split, so I think the athleticism was really going to pop and flash. He's definitely a project. He's not a guy that you're getting on the field in year one, but he has the kind of physical traits worth developing. And I think he has the right kind of mentality that could appeal to some people as well. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with one more interview right after this.
We appreciate you supporting KC Sports Network by listening to our podcast. You have helped us become the highest ranked Chiefs podcast network in 2022 and 2023. And don't forget about our daily Substack newsletter, the best written analysis you can find on the Chiefs straight to your inbox every day. KCSN.substack.com.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events. The list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This is the KCSN Draft Show, giving you a chance to hear from some of the players that we've talked to over the pre-draft process. We've got another one for you. It's Andrew Coker, the offensive tackle out of TCU. Here's our interview with Andrew Coker.
We're sitting down here with Andrew Coker, offensive lineman from TCU. Thank you for sitting down with us. We appreciate your time and everything while we were down here. I just want to start, how did you get into football? Kind of, how, you know, when you were younger, what drew you to the sport of football to find that passion for it?
Yeah, so my mom put me in football at 5 years old, so I've been around it my whole life. I mean, I've been playing for, forever. I mean, I don't know anything else, really. I mean, I do know other things, but football has just been everything that I've done up to this point. And my mom, like I said, my mom put me in it, but I ended up falling in love with it, you know, shortly after. So it's just been great.
So were you a big five-year-old? Were you playing with other five-year-olds? Were you playing with kids that were bigger than you?
So I played up my first year.
Uh-huh.
My first year I played up, which sucked because when that team moved on to the next grade level, I couldn't move with them.
Ah.
I was too young. So that was my first team. They were actually the Patriots, the KYF Patriots. I played with them first. And then when they moved on, I had to stay with the younger Patriots, who then became my Patriots, who I played with for the next, 6 years after that. So it was great, though.
What position were you playing then?
So back then, I was playing both offense and defensive line. I never really got the ball. I was never really – because I was always a big kid, so I always play offense and defensive line, even in flag football. You know, it was just – it was one of those things where, I mean, I was a big kid, so I played on the line, you know?
Yeah.
When did you transition kind of full time to an offensive lineman? Did you want to play on the offensive side of the ball? How'd that kind of play out for you?
So growing up, defensive line was definitely more fun than offensive line, right? Because at least you got to tackle somebody every once in a while, right? So I always played defensive line. I played both ways the whole time until pretty much middle school. Middle school, I played D-line only, actually. I played D-line only. I came in offense every once in a while. But then once I got to high school, I was like, yeah, I'm probably an offensive lineman. And it was one of those things where, I mean, it was a blessing, honestly. I mean, I love playing offensive line now.
Yeah, two-part question for you here. What does football mean to you? Just like the sport of football, what does that mean to you as a player? And then to follow up, what does being an offensive lineman mean to you? Like, how do you feel when you're stepping out there as an offensive lineman, your importance to the team, how reliable you need to be and everything?
Yeah, I mean, those are two questions that I love because I love playing football. I love football, and I love being an offensive lineman. I think that – so football has taught me so much in life just about adversity, you know, the good, the bad, the ugly, what it's like to be a part of a team, what it takes to be successful, the relationships that you make, you know, that are embedded in football. It's all just so – it's all great, and I wouldn't change anything for the world. I wouldn't exchange any of these relationships for anything I've ever had outside of football. You know, there's just so many memories that football has brought me. I mean, I played on the national championship. You know, that was a great experience. You know, I mean, I don't know how I get on a national stage like that without football, right?
Right.
It's just so great. There's so many great things that football brings. And along with that, being an offensive lineman, I always say that offensive line is a one-of-a-kind position in all sports. You know, it's kind of a thankless position. It's a position where you don't get to touch the ball, really. It's a position where you kind of get forgot about if you're not really paying attention, if that makes sense. Most of the time you hear something about the offensive line, it's usually negative, right? But I think that builds character. I really do. I think that being an offensive lineman, you know, is different because we don't look for the praise. We don't look for, you know, we're not on the stat sheet. We're not trying to figure out, you know, like, we're not the flashy guys usually. We're just the guys that go to work every day, do our job, keep our quarterback clean, and make holes for our running back. And to me, that all encompasses being what it is. You know, at times, you know, everybody's going to go through that in their life where they're not the center of attention, right? And how do you respond and how do you act like that? Act when that happens, I think offensive line has prepared us well for it.
You talked about relationships there. Is there a particular relationship that jumps out to you that football has brought you that it is just very meaningful to you personally that you wouldn't have otherwise had?
Oh, man, there's so many. There's so many. I don't want to single anyone out and make others mad. I mean, I got Steve Avila, plays for the Rams now, one of my best friends. He'll be up there with me at my wedding. Brandon Coleman from Germany. And I don't know if we ever would have met, but he's one of my best friends. He'll be up there at my wedding. Dominic Nunzio played tight end now in the Army. He'll be up there with me at my wedding. Max Duggan, our quarterback last year, one of my best friends from Iowa. We probably never would have met if we didn't have football. Yeah. He'll be up there with me at my wedding. So there's just so many guys that football has brought me to be a part of and meet and be a part of their life.
How would your teammates describe you as a person and as a teammate? Not simply a football player, but as a teammate or a person?
Yeah, I think that they would describe me as accountable. I think that there's, you know, they could always rely on me to be where I'm supposed to be, do what I'm supposed to do, and do my job. And I think either accountable or reliable, one of the two. I mean, I played a lot of games for TCU, been around for a long time. I think that those two words would probably do the best to describe me.
So you mentioned you played a lot of games for TCU. If somebody is not really focused, you know, on the offensive line for TCU, obviously played a lot of national games, but they haven't focused a lot on the offensive line. What game would you point them to say, man, that was a really good game for me or your entire offensive line?
Michigan, 2022. Sure.
Yeah.
For sure. I mean, that game right there is, I think, when people realize, like, this TCU offensive line is pretty good. Because nobody really thought that we could hang with the big, bad bullies of the Big Ten, which, I mean, they were good. Michigan was good. I'll give them their credit. But I don't think people realized how good we were. And we rushed for 200 yards or something like that. And everybody's just kind of like, whoa, you know, like, TCU offensive line, what? We all played really, really well that game. I mean, we got the win. It was huge. But, yeah, that would probably be the game I'd be like, go watch.
So you mentioned offensive line's a little bit of a thankless position. It's super physical. It's taxing. How do you get yourself mentally prepared before the game starts? When you're stepping out on the field, how do you have yourself ready mentally for what's about to ensue for the next 60 minutes?
Yeah, we always like to say, if you play offensive line or defensive line, you're going to get it's a little mini car wreck, which you're going to get into playing in a football game. But the thing that I do the most to help me get mentally prepared is just kind of just take time to meditate, right? And it's like, it's not too long. It's not just kind of, I'm truly zenned out, just sitting there in my locker. It's just one of those things where I just, you know, put some like light music on and just think. And all I'm trying to do is just get my mind focused on the task at hand, you know? And I think that's the biggest way, because if I'm focused on the task at hand, all those bumps and hits and all that kind of stuff, you won't feel that till the morning after, right? Yeah. So just staying focused on the task at hand will help. It helps me get prepared for games.
What music?
So if I'm trying to meditate, it's usually some sort of lighter, like R&B type of music. It's not like a rapper or anything. It's really just kind of like a lighter. It's usually, I try to find a slower paced one. Like, I don't know if y'all have heard Coffee by Miguel. Mm-hmm. Like that, it just plays like real light, real slow, you know. That usually helps me get kind of in that mode.
Would you rather, you know, your choice here, would you rather be blocking for a run or dropping back and blocking for a pass?
I mean, any offensive lineman that tells you pass, I don't understand. I
mean, position then, right?
It's like pass blocking is that's not the fun part of offensive line. That's the part that you're like, okay, fine, I guess we'll do that too. You know, everybody wants to run the ball. Run the ball, you know, it's more fun. It's more fun to try to displace people. It's more fun. To me, whenever you see a really good run play unfold, it looks a lot prettier than pass plays. I mean, yeah, it's cool. Somebody's wide open, whatever, yeah. But whenever you see a really, really good run play unfold, it looks really, really nice.
What's your favorite run concept to block for?
GT counter. A lot of people in the NFL actually don't really run GT counter. It's more GY counter or power. But at TCU, we ran a lot of GT because we ran a lot of 10 personnel. We didn't have tight end in the game as much, but we did more this year. But yeah, getting GT out, GT counter, getting the tackle around to get to pull, I mean, that's really fun. You know, there's a lot of times that the tackle isn't the second puller. That's really the only one if it's GT. So it's really fun. And then on the front side, it's gap scheme. Everybody likes gap scheme, you know, so GT is the most fun.
You're going to run GT counter. You're the backside. You're pulling. Walk us through your process as that snap starts and the play goes on, what you're looking for, what you're keying off of as you're pulling around.
Yeah, so first it depends on if we're running out of 11 personnel with a tight end on the front side or not. If we're running with the tight end on the front side, I know that we have an extra man surface usually. So the pull's just a tad longer. Not a big deal. But whenever I pull, I usually skip pull. So I usually put my right leg, but if I'm playing right tackle, my right behind my left, try to stay as square as I can to the line of scrimmage. But now, throughout all this chaos on the gap side, throughout all this chaos, I'm trying to find my backer throughout all that. And I usually can find him. It's usually the play side backer. Guard will kick out the end. But I'm trying to find that play side backer. But at the same time, while I'm trying to find that play side backer, I have to feel my guard. Because if I feel him and he gets wrong-shouldered, which means they're trying to spill to the outside, if he gets wrong-shouldered, I have to get around all of that to get to my linebacker. So it's one of those things where it's a look and a feel. I have to look for my backer and track him, but I have to feel my guard to see what kind of block he has. So it's a really fun block. I mean, I've executed it pretty well over my career, and I really, really like it.
Yeah. All right.
I was going to say, do you have a specific favorite play from your career at TCU here that you just remember kind of every detail about? Maybe it was a game-winning play, just a big run, or any specific thing that sticks out?
Yeah, so I remember this play, and it's kind of funny because this is a play in Michigan, which, I mean, a lot. It's probably every TCU fan's favorite play. Which I'm not the main character in the play. I'm not. I'm just there, but I love it so much. So we ran. It's called slap. It's a drag route. It's behind line of scrimmage, and we knew Michigan would play man, and we had a really, really good receiver, Quinn Johnson, and he's just running across the field, and all we're doing is we're just trying to dump it off to him and let him get a first down. So what was also cool about this play is our center, Alon Ali, who's a really good player. We knew that Michigan was going to bring this pressure where they were going to line up guys covering all five, and they were going to drop the guy over the center and bring somebody else off the edge. We had no way to get back to that. So what we ended up doing is Alon knew on the snap, he's going to check that linebacker. If he drops, he's going to molly back behind everybody on the right side to get to the edge guy. So he ended up doing that, got just a piece of the edge guy. We dump it off to Q, a 70 or 60-something yard touchdown to seal the game. It was,
yeah.
Let's fast forward. Draft night's here. You get that phone call on draft night. You know, you're being selected to the NFL. Who's there with you? What are the feelings that are going through you and everything as that happens?
Yeah, so my whole family's going to be there for sure. Mom, dad, brother, sister, all my brothers, my sister, my girlfriend will probably be there as well. And I think this is the emotions that will go to me. It's just kind of like a – kind of just like an aha moment, you know, like kind of one that words can't really describe, you know, just kind of like all this that I've worked for so long is finally coming and it's finally going to be here. And a team, I'm going to be able to take my talents to a team that really wants me, that I feel like I can help win. And I feel like it's just going to be kind of just an all-encompassing moment. Now, I can't get caught up in the moment too long because I still got to play football, right? But it's going to be one of those things where, you know, it's going to be a beautiful moment, a beautiful day, so.
Well, thank you, Andrew. We appreciate your time and sitting down with us, and good luck throughout this whole process.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, TCU offensive tackle Andrew Coker, yet another just big human, just a big human. I think he had a good process at the East-West Shrine Bowl. I think he did a good job helping himself. He's another guy I think projects as a developmental player that might have the ability to, you know, play multiple positions for this team. You know, he doesn't necessarily have the same kind of athletic upside as some of these other players do, but I think he's got, you know, interesting background, interesting projectability. You know, he's played some tackle. I think he could ultimately kick inside, though. You know, he's got, you know, good arm length. He's got good density, good power. And I think, you know, if he's able to operate more in a phone booth rather than having to be stressed off the edge at the at the tackle spot, it might actually help him. And from a Chiefs perspective, the Chiefs like to take tackles that, you know, played, you know, outside and kick them inside. That's one of the things that they prefer. You know, they like to have some positional flexibility. They like players that have done it at multiple spots. Andrew Coker, I think, is a prime candidate to eventually kick inside and play guard. So if the Chiefs were looking at him, I'd anticipate they're probably looking at him as a guard. But good measurables, good size, good length, and I think he could do some things in the run game along the interior. That is going to do it for this episode of the KCSN Draft Show. Thank you all so much for listening. Thank you to Aneem Dankwa. Thank you to Walter Rouse. Thank you to Andrew Coker for joining us. We appreciate you all. We appreciate those guys. We look forward to seeing where they're drafted, and we look forward to seeing who the Chiefs eventually take here at the end of April. We'll catch you later.